Welcome back for the second hour of Issues, Etc. For the first 10 minutes here, we'll be talking with Patty Skane, Executive Director of Missouri Right to Life, based in Jeff City. You've seen the headlines. Governor Holden vetoes GOP bills on abortion and malpractice. It's the first of those bills that interests me. We'll be talking about it for about 10 minutes. If you have a question or a comment on that, the phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Following our conversation with Patty, the remainder of the hour is open lines for your questions and your comments. Anything you want to talk about, but I would like to return briefly, if we could, to the Luther documentary. We were talking about it last week. We had to leave, well, we had to stop the hour with a full board of calls and let people go. Those who didn't get in during that conversation and still want to react to the Luther documentary, it did re-air several times this weekend on PBS. Feel free to give us a call during that time, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Do you think it did justice to the reformer, to his theology? Was it historically accurate? All of those questions about the Luther documentary, and something else I'd like to talk about during open lines, and that is the fact that the sales of Christian and gospel music dropped 10% this year. They were up. A major portion, 7% of the music market, one of the biggest problems for the producers of Christian music, popular Christian music and recordings, the pirating of their music on the internet. Now just do the math for a second. Christian music for Christians being pirated by Christians. The interesting thing is the industry is asking, well, now wait a minute, maybe we're doing a ministry here by letting our music be pirated for free. After all, people will be hearing the gospel, but the problem, we got to sell records, don't we? We'll talk about it during open lines. Patty Skane is Executive Director of Missouri Right to Life. Patty, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you very much.
Patty, tell us what happened in the governor's office with regard to this abortion waiting period bill. What was the bill itself?
Well, the bill, HB 156, is actually a bill that allows women to get information before they make an abortion decision. Many women go into abortion clinics looking for help, and they don't necessarily know where to go for information. Actually, they go to, many times, they go to the clinic expecting to get information and hoping to get information, and unfortunately don't get it. We had many women testify that they were not counseled. And so this bill is really about giving women the information they need before making the abortion decision. The reflection period after that is so that she can digest that information.
How do you react to the governor's comment when he issued the veto, where he said that the state of Missouri already has an informed consent law, and that this new measure does nothing more than add, as he says, an unnecessary burden to a woman who is already facing a very difficult situation?
Well, there is in Missouri a requirement that her signature be obtained, but there is nothing to indicate or to specify what information she's given before she makes, you know, signs that piece of paper. And we have seen, again, through different testimonies of many women here in Missouri over a number of different time frames. We had a woman that had an abortion 20 years ago, and we had a woman who testified that had an abortion 2 years ago. And they all testified that they did not receive the proper counseling and the proper medical information before they signed that piece of paper.
So this is simply an effort, this bill was simply an effort to make sure that the information that is supposed to be given to women really got to women, and the 24-hour period allows them to actually digest, mentally digest this information.
Exactly.
Now, what are the chances of the bill coming back to life in some other form?
Well, of course, we hope to override this veto in September on the 10th. We have hopefully the numbers both when the vote was taken, the numbers to override. We have very comfortable numbers in the House of Representatives, a little bit closer in the Senate, but we hope that to be able to call upon these legislators who voted for the bill to, in fact, say, no, the women of Missouri need this legislation and to override the governor.
And you have the votes?
Well, of course, you know, things things change, but and the governor will attempt, of course, to put pressure on some people in the legislature. But, you know, we certainly have been talking to the legislators and expect for this to succeed.
The opponents of the bill would say, look, we cannot interfere with a woman's basic right to make this choice. Any roadblock, any inconvenience, anything, especially making a woman wait, who knows, she may be traveling from some distance, interferes with that basic female right. How do you respond?
Women need the right to make an informed decision. These women that testified, some of them suffered unbelievable anguish and consequences from their abortion decision. You know, to the point where they had psychological problems, they missed work, they lost their jobs, they had eating disorders. In other words, yes, there is a requirement that you come back a second day, but it, compared to the burden and compared to the anguish that these women suffer through the rest of their lives because of this decision they made without proper information, the two things just don't compare.
I think of it in these terms, and tell me if this is a good, simple way of considering this. Any other medical procedure, allowing for the moment that abortion could be viewed as merely a medical procedure, any other medical procedure would involve something like this. I mean, I would want to, just for my own sake, take 24 hours to think over surgery or anything else, unless it was an emergency situation.
Right.
Does that comparison bear up here with the issue of abortion?
Well, exactly. You know, a lot of people say, well, there's no other surgery or there's no other therapy that requires this waiting period, or this reflection period, but that's not true. In order for a person to obtain a sterilization procedure, whether it be tying tubes or vasectomy, that's a 30-day wait. There's also a, I think there is another procedure, a 3-day wait for breast implant surgery. And so there are procedures that can have medical consequences where the individual obtaining the surgery or the procedure has to have a time to get all the information and then reflect on that information.
Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk with Jim, who's calling from his car. Jim, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you, Todd. Mrs. Gain, my question would be, how will Missouri Right to Life respond in the event that any of these pro-life House members or Senate members don't vote to override the governor's veto come the next election cycle?
That is an excellent question, Jim. Thank you very much. Patty?
Well, of course, we're a grassroots organization, and so we're, you know, trying to get everybody motivated in the next 2 months to call their legislators to show up on September 10th. I don't know if you recall when we had the partial birth bill in 1999, but we had a huge number of people here, and it made a significant impact on the legislators. We need to do that again, and we need to be calling them and letting them know why women in Missouri need this bill. In the event that some of these legislators don't do that, you know, I can't speak for the Missouri Right to Life PAC or the endorsement process at this time, but it would be a significant failure on the part of these legislators if they were not to vote to override this veto.
And if they fail to override, what are the future plans for a 24-hour waiting period bill?
Well, we have tried to get this bill passed for a number of years, and it will come back again. It will be back next year in the legislature, and we will go through this process again.
Patty Skane, thank you very much for being our guest on Issues, Etc.
Okay, thanks very much.
Patty Skane is Executive Director of Missouri Right to Life, based in Jefferson City. If you'd like to visit Missouri Right to Life's website, it's missourilife.org, missourilife.org. You can also reach them by telephone at 573 area code 635-5110. That's 573-635-5110. It's open lines for the remainder of this hour. Your questions, your comments, your reaction to the governor's veto, your reaction to something that we were talking about last week. And while we talked about it, we were unable to get to, well, quite a number of people who wanted to talk about it. The Luther documentary on PBS. Did you see the documentary? If you didn't see it the first time, did you see it when it re-aired this weekend? What did you think about it? Was it accurate historically? Did it do justice to Luther the Reformer? What about his theology? We talked about it last week. I'd like to continue that conversation. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I have been mulling over my own reaction to it. I've only seen it the one time, but I've been mulling over my own reaction to it, having heard from a number of people, actually on the web, saw some other reactions to the Luther documentary. I initially was, I'll be honest with you, I was initially somewhat pleased because my expectations were so very low about what might be there. I have seen this thing and things like it botched so many times, and it's always difficult when religious matters are mishandled in the media. But as I reflect upon the documentary, I'm wondering whether or not the documentary's weakness might primarily be that it avoided anything particularly religious, and that is particularly Christian about Luther. It didn't depict him as a religious or merely a political figure or a figure of history, but it was very generic. Far more generic than Luther himself was. Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Did you see it? What did you think of the Luther documentary on PBS? Now, maybe you saw it on Sunday when it re-aired. You might have seen it the first time. Give us a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. To kick things off, let's listen to a critique on this documentary by Dr. Ron Feuerhahn, Associate Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis.
One of the things, however, that was very disquieting to me is the way in which there's the emphasis upon Luther the rebel and the individual. And that emphasis upon the individual, I don't really find in Luther. There was one time in which I said to my wife, I said, oh, no, no, no. And then later on they corrected themselves, as it were. I forget right off what it was, but it had to do with the way in which this was coming out. And Luther was a man who was not trying to leave the church. He did not want to have himself apart from the church. And that was a clear impression I had last night. I don't know if that was really what they were getting at all, but that was one of the most disquieting things, the idea that the church, in its flawed nature, was to be shunned.
That was Dr. Ron Feuerhahn speaking on Issues Etc. last week when we asked him for his assessment of the Luther documentary the first time it aired. Do you agree or disagree with Dr. Feuerhahn's assessment? Give me a call, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. He said too much emphasis upon Luther as the rebel, the individual, and perhaps portrayed him as trying to leave the church rather than stay with the church and allow the gospel to have its way in the church by way of reform. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's go to the phones. Up first, Kurt is calling from his car. Kurt, welcome to Issues Etc. Kurt, welcome. We will get Kurt back. We might have made him wait a little too long. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's been said, now this is almost axiomatic in Reformation circles, Luther wasn't trying to start his own church. And actually, this has been conceded by Luther's biggest critics historically, Roman Catholic historians. They've said, no, he wasn't trying to start his own church, but he did. But he did. I'm often interested when I see something like an historical documentary, take a figure, their motivations, try to psychologize the guy with modern psychology, and try to inject into the issues of that day the issues that we think are important today. Sometimes we want to co-opt figures of history in order to say, you know, Luther, he was really the same kind of rebel and rugged individual that we Americans are today. I'm always suspicious of that. Not only does it co-opt history for purposes other than which it ought to serve, but tries to shoehorn the figures of history. People do this with Jesus all the time, don't they? Jesus becomes he becomes the spokesman for modern day causes. Things that he never would have dreamed of lending his support or his name to, he becomes the huckster for modern day causes. And we bristle when people do it with Jesus. We should probably, just for the sake of principle, bristle equally when people do it with other figures of history. It's done with the Founding Fathers, with Luther, and the other reformers. Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Anything you want to talk about, but I would like your reaction to the Luther documentary. I was looking in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Here's the headline. These things always catch my attention. Sales of Christian and gospel music drop 10%. Now, this is a story not only of lagging sales, which can be attributed to any number of things, but it's also the story of a moral and financial conundrum in the contemporary Christian music industry. Listen to the story. Sales of Christian and gospel music dropped 10% in the first half of 2003, with industry leaders blaming music piracy and the economy for the drop. Now, I read that first line and I thought to myself, something is odd about this. You've heard stories about the secular music industry blaming a loss of sales on music piracy, people going onto the internet with Kazaa, or what was the one that came out and got it all started? Oh, I can't remember the name of it for the life of me now. These programs that you can download free, and they allow you to go out and share musical content among the various users, and you download his music, and he downloads your music, and nobody's paying for it. Well, somebody's paying for it up front, but by the time it's ran through the mill of the internet, nobody's paying for it. Rock stars have come out and said, heavy metal stars have come out and said, you're taking money out of my pocket, you're taking food out of my children's mouths, quit pirating my music. They've been trying to figure out a way to make this work out. And are we surprised? Are we surprised in our culture that people are willing to get something for nothing? No, not at all. But here we're talking about Christian music. And I would assume that the majority of those who consume Christian music are Christians. And yet the music industry says that one of its major reasons for showing a 10% drop in the first half of 2003 is music piracy. Now, they're down from 23.5 million units to 21 million units. 10%, a little bit more than 10% decline. One of the industry representatives, John Still, says this: there's no doubt that our music is being pirated at the same levels of other types of music. That is, there's no doubt that Christian music is being pirated at the same level of any other kind of music. We do, however, face a unique paradox. On the one hand, we have the moral argument that stealing music is wrong, and on the other, some naively have argued that downloading and sharing the gospel music is a type of ministry. It is a moral conundrum, isn't it? Keith Green, remember him? Back in the early days, he used to give his albums away for free. Love offering, fine. If you can't pay anything, take my album. Kind of the Abbie Hoffman of early Christian music. Steal this album. He wanted the gospel out. He considered it a scandal to charge for the gospel. The phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Kurt is calling from his car. Kurt, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Pastor. Well, sorry you lost me there.
That's fine.
I did not see the Luther documentary. However, I really wish I could have. There was something else I did see on TV that caught my interest. Did you see 60 Minutes last night?
I did not see it. What was on?
It was on, basically, it was all these different groups and people that are protesting people owning and driving SUVs. And among the people who were protesting was, as they addressed it, a bunch of religious groups. And they were going on the ticket of WWJD. What would Jesus drive?
Oh, yeah.
And first of all, I would really like to know what your take is on it, but I think, if nothing else, that's definitely disobeying the Second Commandment. I mean, isn't that my taking the name of the Lord in vain? Or am I being too Lutheran?
Kurt, thank you very much for the call. Now, we've talked about what would Jesus drive before. This was some months back when it first hit the news. It was, in fact, an evangelical environmental group. They're evangelical environmentalists. I don't know I can't remember the name of the group, but they put out this campaign. What would Jesus drive? Okay, let's get to Kurt's question first. Is it a breaking of the Second Commandment? Do not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. I think it certainly can be. I think it certainly can be. In fact, if the intent is to use the name of Jesus for any other purpose than the purpose for which he gave it to us, his name is intended to be for us the signal, the source of him revealing himself to us as Savior, not as someone who would be concerned about which car he bought and drove down the highway, but as the Savior from sin, the crucified and risen Savior. This is the purpose for which God has given us his name. Now, I think it's safe to say that whenever God's name, be it the name of God the Father, or God the Son, or God the Holy Spirit, or the whole Trinity for that matter, is brought into service of a purpose other than the one for which God has given us his name, the Second Commandment is broken. Now, is it an amusing breaking of the Second Commandment? Yes, it is. Got a good chuckle out of it. What would Jesus drive? Some people say he wouldn't drive anything. He'd just teleport wherever he wanted to go. And I asked the question when we talked about it before. Look, if you think you bought the vehicle that Jesus would drive, we get into this big conversation about hybrids. Are you saying that it's okay to use a little bit of gasoline, but not a lot of gasoline, and that Jesus would be fine using fossil fuels as long as you supplemented it with an electric engine in your car? Kind of making Jesus, his moral standard for what he would drive, how good a mileage the car gets. Becomes a very twisted thing when you start to think about it. When we come back, we'll hear the close of the PBS documentary on Martin Luther that aired last week and over the weekend. And we'll get your phone calls, your reaction to that or any subject at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. What do you make of this moral and financial conundrum in the contemporary Christian music industry about pirated music? We'll be right back.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Can God's ways be generally understood by human reason? Is God's favor manifested in life's successes and victories? Is God pleased by sincere human effort? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, host of Issues Etc. You'll find answers to these questions in the latest edition of the Issues Etc. Journal. I've written an article titled, The Theology of the Cross, Cross-Shaped Theology. The latest issue also contains articles titled, The Means of Grace, A Confident and Joyful Heart by Pastor Eric Rotman, Living in Two Kingdoms, Peace or War, Order or Chaos by Pastor Mark Sell, and Craig Parton's essay, From Evangelicalism to the Evangel. Plus, you'll find a list of tape and book resources. You can receive a complimentary copy of the Issues Etc. Journal by calling our resource line at 1-800-737-0172 or write Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Terry Phillips. A Republican attempt to stop the funding of some controversial sex research studies at the National Institutes of Health has failed. The vote was close at 212 to 210, but when the smoke cleared, those studies of questionable value were allowed to continue. David Brody reports from Capitol Hill.
Some of the ongoing projects by the NIH have taken some conservative lawmakers by surprise. Congressman Pat Toomey led the charge to try and stop them.
I just don't understand how we can justify spending taxpayer money on studying, you know, American Indian and Alaskan Native, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, and two-spirited individuals and their psychological problems.
And there's more. How about studying Asian prostitutes in San Francisco or the sexual habits of old men?
I think most people don't have any idea that this is going on. And I think, you know, when they find out, they're appalled by this kind of stuff.
The National Institutes for Health is out of control.
Mike Schwartz is with Concerned Women for America. He says one of the big problems here is that lawmakers love to throw money at the NIH so they look compassionate in the process. But Schwartz says what ends up happening is growing an organization that's already too big.
The National Institutes for Health is spending money on in a wasteful way because they have more money than is good for them.
Members who voted against the amendment say Congress shouldn't be telling the NIH what projects they should be doing. But Toomey says,
my response to that is we have an obligation to be looking over the spending of every government agency.
In the end, though, that was not enough to convince members that these strange sexual studies should be axed. For Family News and Focus, I'm David Brody in Washington.
33 Democrats voted for Republican Toomey's amendment. 46 Republicans voted no. Of the four studies, perhaps the most controversial involves women watching pornography so arousal can be measured. For Family News and Focus, I'm Terry Phillips.
You've heard the saying, all things being equal, friends buy from friends. Well, it gets even better when your friend sells you something for a much lower price than other people are paying. And Lifeline Long Distance is a Christian company. So we'll donate 10% of every long-distance call you make for the advancement of the gospel. Hey, after all, what are friends for? Lifeline, long distance with a higher calling.
To sign up for Lifeline Long Distance service and benefit AM 850 KFUO, call 1-800-607-5128.
What motivated Dietrich Bonhoeffer's classic writings, The Cost of Discipleship and Life Together? Find out with a book, Till the Night Be Past, published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Till the Night Be Past is a biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, 1-800-325-3040. You can find out more about this book on the internet, issuesetc.org, and click What's New. Till the Night Be Past, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, 1-800-325-3040.
Luther's story just reminds us of the power of individual charisma. Charisma, both the person standing up and talking, but even charisma that can travel on the page, on the written page.
You never can sort of dislike the guy. Luther is this elementary force embodied in language, offering a vision of salvation which is liberating, which resonates, which seems real to so many people. And almost once you see it that way, you can't see the world differently.
Luther is irrepressible. He's outrageous. He's witty. He's very funny. But he remains in our imaginations as someone who is highly relevant for insisting on being devoted to principle and to speaking out.
The emphasis on the individual, the courage of the individual, and the willingness of the individual to undergo death for his profession, for his beliefs. And in this way, Luther has to be ranked with the great emancipators of human history. Luther would finally die in the year 1546, seized by a crippling heart attack after a harsh winter journey to the town of his birth, Eisleben. He had held on to his sense of rage and his ear for a good phrase until the very end.
When I die, I want to be a ghost, so I can continue to pester the bishops, priests, and godless monks until they have more trouble with a dead Luther than they could have had before with 1,000 living ones.
It is true, he is eminently quotable, there's no doubt about it, although I would hasten to add, and that was, by the way, the end of the Luther documentary that aired on PBS. We're asking for your reaction to it, picking up on the conversation we had last week during Open Lines on the very same subject at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I would hasten to add that not everything Luther wrote or said is worth quoting. Some of it is amusing, some of it is interesting, but very little of it actually binds Lutherans. Some of it's downright wrong. What binds Lutherans are the Lutheran confessions, the confessions of the Reformers, and not anything and everything Luther said or did. That's a common misunderstanding, by the way, a very common, even among Lutherans. They'll sit there and argue about whether or not Lutherans believe this or that from Luther's works. And they'll quote Luther's works here and there. Luther's works don't bind Christians, do not bind Lutherans. The Lutheran confessions, the Book of Concord, is what binds and expresses what it is Lutherans believe, of which Luther was only partly the author. 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Let's go to Michael, who's calling from Pittsburgh, listening on the Internet. Michael, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello. I got a comment on the MP3 issue you were talking about.
Yeah.
Well, I would say MP3s, if used properly, can be good. It allows one to explore music before they buy it. I used to download MP3s. I've stopped downloading since then. But when I downloaded, I was able to download some. If I didn't like them, I deleted them. If I liked them, I ended up buying some albums from it. And since I stopped downloading MP3s, I have, at the same time, stopped buying albums.
Really?
Yes.
Now, so you're saying that the so-called, quote-unquote, piracy of music may, in fact, increase sales to the music industry rather than hurt the sales, if you are an example there.
Yes. If you also look at the time when Napster existed, I don't know if you remember Napster.
I certainly do. I was searching for that name earlier.
Yeah. If you look at the record sales when it became popular and when it went out of business, you'll notice that it jumped and then declined within the same period.
Michael, thank you very much for the call. Now that's interesting. You know what I do? I like to play computer games. And what I will do is I'll go out on the Internet as a game. A game is about to come out. Usually the company who puts out the game, the full game that you go and buy for $50 in the store, puts out a demo, a downloadable demo. It's one level of the game or something like that, just a taste to see whether or not you'll want to buy it. And I'll download it and I'll play it and I'll say, maybe it's worth my money, maybe it isn't, maybe I'll wait until it gets on the bargain shelf. Michael says that's how he's using the pirated music that he downloads. The interesting thing is the dip in the sales of contemporary Christian music are being blamed by the industry upon, in part, not only a declining economy, but music piracy. It seems as though the courts and the music industry have made up their mind that music piracy is stealing. You're stealing someone else's property. In other words, you're taking it without paying for it. But according to an industry leader, John Still, Christian music is being pirated at the same levels of every other type of music, and we must presume that much of that piracy is taking place among Christians. I can just imagine the paradox there for the industry. You know, he says, on the one hand, we have a moral argument that stealing music is wrong. On the other hand, some naively have argued that downloading and sharing gospel music is a kind of ministry. I can just see them, okay. One, share the gospel freely. On the other hand, sell our records. Which shall I choose? What do you think? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Harold is calling from St. Charles. Harold, thank you for waiting. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes, I was disappointed in the film. I didn't think there was really a lot of solid Lutheran theology in there. And if someone said they wish they had Dr. Robert Kolb to be on it, or if they should have consulted a real Luther scholar, Dr. Martin Brecht from Germany, who has three thick volumes on Luther, wonderful stuff if you want to know something about it. And our people think very highly of it there. And then to, you know, the idea that Hitler railed and ranted against the Jews. Unfortunately, he did. But, you know, Luther had high hopes there that all we had to do is to bring the gospel to the Jews and they'd be converted. But after a period of time, the Jews did not come across, and Luther just turned, oh, it was shameful what the man had to say about the Jews. But then, too, if you would listen to Dr. Glenn Sweck at our sister seminary in Cambridge, Westfield House, he says, if Luther was such a violent anti-Semite, why would he want to seek Jews in heaven? And so, indeed, that's the case. And then, too, one of my brother's professors there in Cambridge, the late Gordon Rupp, wrote an excellent book called Martin Luther, Hitler's Cause or Cure. You know, Hitler, you know, it's a lot of people like William L. Shire of The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich says, oh, it was Luther, you know, who conditioned the German people for his unquestionable obedience to God's ordained authority. But anyway, Gordon Rupp wrote this excellent little 94-page book called Hitler's Cause or Cure, in which he answers a Jewish chap named Peter Wiener, and just rebuts all of the arguments there that Luther was just totally a rabid anti-Semite. And, you know, we had the gentleman on there, Roman Catholic, who said, oh, Luther is in hell. Well, what happened there on Luther's deathbed? I don't know if it was Pastor Amsdorf or one of Luther's closest friend pastors there. And so his reverend father, addressing this to Luther, do you still hold to the truth there that you have proclaimed throughout your Reformation time there? Some words to that effect. And Luther, in a very strong voice, said, yeah. Now tell me, the man like that is going to wind up in hell.
Harold, thank you for the call. You know, my response to the caller last week when he said Luther's in, he says, don't you know Luther's in hell? My response was, it's irrelevant whether or not he's in hell. Whether he is in hell personally really makes no difference. I do know what he confessed. I don't know what Luther personally believed because I can't look into Luther's heart. He could have been a fraud. It makes no difference. What he confessed was the clear and unambiguous gospel of Jesus Christ that saves. It saves. Although, it's interesting that the Roman Catholic would call in and say, Luther's in hell. One question I did want to ask, and I didn't at the time, was, is that what your church teaches? Is that what the Roman Catholic Church teaches, that Luther is in hell? The last time I checked, they don't. Now, they did at one time popularly opine about Luther and his eternal destiny with regard to hell, but I do not believe it is the official teaching of the Roman Catholic Church that Luther is in hell, in which case, a Catholic who would make that assertion is departing from the teachings of his church. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. In fact, someone might be enlightened to read the 1995 Catechism of the Catholic Church to find out that far from teaching that the likes of Luther are in hell, the Roman Catholic Church presently teaches that they're not, and in fact, you can even be a Buddhist or a Muslim of good faith and wind up in heaven. Mark is calling from his car. Mark, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Pastor Todd, this is in regard to the trailers you played for the show about Luther.
Yes.
And the one thing that struck me is they were talking about how extraordinary Luther was, and they said nothing about the gospel. And I didn't see it, so I could easily be wrong on this, but it just struck me from the trailers that this is going to be a more modern emphasis where the gospel is, you know, de-emphasized, if mentioned, or barely mentioned, and they talk about how extraordinary the individual is.
Mark,
so the emphasis is wrong.
Mark, thank you very much. That's a good insight. I mean, if one is looking for, we paid that little wrap-up from the documentary, if one is looking for an Achilles heel in this documentary, one could certainly find several, but one might be the emphasis upon Luther as the man rather than the Savior he confessed. Or you could put it this way. If Luther were to, if he were to commission or to allow a documentary or a biography of himself to have been written, would he have wanted it to end with how remarkable Luther was or how remarkable Jesus Christ is? The phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. There's something else, too, to note about this documentary, and that is that it deals with early Luther. It deals with Luther in literally the first decade or so of the Reformation. From the posting of the 95 Theses to the Diet of Worms is not a long time. And that's just about all it dealt with Luther. It did not deal with, we could say, mature Luther, or Luther in his full theological flower. Some people do wonder, when did the gospel, when did the doctrine of justification, how do men stand before a righteous God, justified freely by God's grace, which is God's undeserved favor, for the sake of Christ alone, received through faith alone, when did this actually come crystal clear to Luther? You can read Luther even past his so-called tower experience and still read hints of a works-based salvation. It certainly came clear at one point. When did it work its way all the way like leaven through his whole theology? That's another question. The 95 Theses, by the way, did not properly deal with the issue of justification per se. They were dealing with the issue of repentance. When one reads the 95 Theses, that is not... There's a reason why the 95 Theses are not in the Lutheran Confessions. They don't belong there. They have some good things to say, but they are still thoroughly Roman Catholic. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Walt is calling from his car. Walt, thank you for waiting. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Well, I agree with everything you just said, but I'm looking at the video as a little bit more of a from a historical perspective, and I don't think they gave a lot of credit to people like Philip Melanchthon. In fact, I don't recall hearing his name once.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact well, they mentioned Luther writing the Bible, didn't say anything about him actually creating almost the modern German language as it's as it was spoken. He created a whole bunch of words for the Bible. And I was very upset that they didn't include what I consider one of Luther's greatest works, like you mentioned just a minute or two ago, that it was dealt more with the early part. I thought his best work was the Small Called Articles, and felt that that there should be at least some mention of some of the things that happened after the first 10 years, that it could have easily been another 30 minutes or an hour that they could have dealt on some of these issues and did a lot better job.
Walt, thank you very much. Those are three concerns that I shared as well. Not only the fact that the other giants of the Reformation did not enter into the picture. It's kind of Luther, one man standing against the world. But the fact is, he went to the Diet of Worms not as a lone individual. He went there with the support of many others, not just his prince, but other pastors and theologians, even at that early time. And Philip Melanchthon is a conspicuous omission. Because Philip Melanchthon did, in fact, articulate in writing much of Luther's thought, and it is Philip Melanchthon who is the principal author of the foundational confessional documents of the Lutheran Confessions, being the Augsburg Confession and the Apology to the Augsburg Confession. And I agree with you 100%, Walt. One of Luther's greatest, although I don't think he considered it his greatest, one of his greatest is a Small Called Articles. He considered his greatest work what is called his Great Confession on the Lord's Supper. He said that one was worth keeping, maybe the rest of it. I wouldn't keep everything, but that one was worth keeping. And there's so much more, of course, I guess. Monica is calling from Swansea. Monica, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Pastor. My daughter and I and my husband just got back last night from Michigan. We went to Calvin College for a conference with 600 international students. My daughter's going to Germany for a year on a foreign exchange program to be a student. And we met with all the German counselors, German students that are inbounds here, various authorities on how this exchange is going to go. It was 5 days of meetings. And after we got through all the information and started having one-on-one conversations, or group-on-group, German students, German counselors with American students, my daughter and my husband and I asked, how do we broach the subject with the German families, because she'll live with three families in a year, about going to church? How is that best going to be handled in the land of Luther? And to a person, adults and children, to a person, they all said, we are not churchgoers. I know you're all excited about coming to the land of Luther, but we don't go to church in Germany.
Now, where is she going to be in, just for the sake of argument, where is she going to be in Germany?
Northern Germany. She's going to be in Heikendorf, Germany, which is on the Baltic Sea, about 50 miles north of Kiel. So she will be in an area that they call predominantly evangelical, because what they do is they call you either Catholic, Catholic, or evangelicish. I don't know how they say the word in German.
Evangelisch.
Thank you. When you ask about denominations, they look at you kind of sideways. Actually, they kind of find that confusing. But she's going to be in an area that they say is more predominantly Protestant. But as far as going to church, she can find a church and she can take herself there, but not to expect a family that would be a church-going family. It's just very rare.
Monica, thank you very much for the call. You know, this is something that I guess I can't say it surprised me. I knew it going in when I went to Germany recently to discover that Luther is considered there not a theological reformer. Yes, they know that he translated the Bible into the language of the people, and they hail him for the fact that he was, as an earlier caller, I think it was Walt, pointed out, he was, in fact, the father of the modern German language in his translation, in his prolific writing. You got to remember, he was the bestseller of the day. There's no two ways about it. He was the most prolific author of the day and probably most widely read. It's just an accident of history. A reformer in education, in German nationalism, but they're not so much interested in his theology. In fact, one might say they're not interested at all. That's a generalization, but I think it's true. Not of everyone, of course. It's hard to find a German citizen who even says that they believe in God, much less are Christian. It just goes to show what Luther said is quite true when he talking about the gospel. He says, it is like the violent rain shower that moves across the face of the country. What it hits, what it misses, and it passes from one place to another, and whenever those who brought it to the fore are gone, often the pure preaching of the gospel goes with them. And he says this invites in factious and false spirits into the church. So eventually the church just becomes just an artifact of culture. You can find churches over there. Oh my goodness, the churches are amazing. They're also empty. It's a largely agnostic, atheist country now. But you know, the same can be said of the land of Calvin's origins and Zwingli's origins. For almost all of Europe, for that matter, the great reformers of the English language. Same is true. The gospel moves on, keeps on moving like a rain shower. What it hits, and what it misses. And no one land or nation or geographical boundaries can say we have it and it will be ours forever, and we can basically take it for granted. No one denomination can say this either. We've got it locked up in a strong box, and we'll never lose the gospel. In fact, we can take it for granted and we can move on to more important things because we know what the gospel is. Germany should teach us that example. You simply can't do it. If I were a parish pastor still, would I take this Luther documentary to my congregation or maybe even invite those outside into the church to attend and watch it? I think the answer is yes. Not because it would be in and of itself a great evangelism tool. In and of itself, it's just an introduction, I think a fairly accurate, although it doesn't cover everything, and it certainly doesn't cover the most important things, an introduction to the struggle that this man, Luther, was having with his God. You see, Luther understood very early on that his problem was God. And he knew that if God was the source of his problem, God would have to be the answer to his problem. He found nothing in himself to solve this problem. All the good works of the most strict monks, the strictest were the Augustinians, of the strictest house of monks were the Black Friars. Luther was the strictest of the strictest Black Friars. He tried to save himself through good works and prayers and all these self-invented works. And eventually, driven to despair by the law of God, he realized that the word of God was too high for him to keep, for anyone to keep, save the one who kept it, Jesus Christ. And there in that book of Romans, he found that passage, "Now a righteousness of God is revealed that is apart from works." It's the righteousness of Jesus Christ that avails before God for us all. Now, you get from the documentary, the introduction to Luther, to that message, now you're doing evangelism. In the few minutes here that are left, I want to remind you about our Issues Etc. book of the month for July. It's about another Luther, and it's a simple biography of a very complex man. You won't find a lot of theology there, but you will find the biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. It's called Till the Night Be Past, The Life and Times of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. The cost of the book is $15.99 plus shipping and handling. You can order the book online tonight at our website, issuesetc.org. Go to the What's New section, and there you'll find information on Till the Night Be Past, The Life and Times of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, or call Concordia Publishing House tomorrow during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, and ask to receive the Issues Etc. book of the month for July called Till the Night Be Past, The Life and Times of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. When we come back from this break, Dr. Ergun Kaner joins us, very rapidly becoming one of my favorite guests. He is a former Sunni Muslim, and he's going to talk to us about Muslim beliefs, about Jesus and Christianity. You know, the myths run both ways. There are Muslim myths about Jesus, and there are Christian myths about Muslims. We'll try to clear most of it up in the final hour of Issues Etc. with Dr. Ergun Kaner when we come back. Keep listening. It is important to understand how the Muslim thinks about you, O Christian, and it's important that you rightly understand the Muslim as well. We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.